All the star he was fixed when I said.
So that and so that is the executive order yesterday that they for those two paragraphs were built on the executive order of March of last year. Right. And so it required any production well permit application in a Sigma basin, meaning in our case, medium or high priority. In Siskiyou County's case, you had Bee Valley, Scott Valley, Shasta Valley, and Tule Lake. Any production well permit application had to get some sort of written verification from the GSA. It could have been, from our understanding, it could have been as easy as an email from the GSA saying, yeah, no problem. It didn't need full scientific justification. However, we didn't operate that way up here. So now with this new order, executive order, it essentially extends it a year. And so no, the board isn't reviewing every well application that comes in. It goes through staff to review, work with our technical folks. However, we haven't approved a production well permit under this executive order yet.
Okay.
That includes domestic wells?
No, so domestic wells, as you mentioned, 2 acre footer left or less are exempt.
This project is exempt.
You've answered the question.
Domestic well.
Okay. Any other questions for Mr. Parker?
I'm good.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
All right. Who'd you like to call up to the hot seat next?
What's
Commissioner
that?
Hart?
Mr. Pearson. Good morning. They're proposing one well. There are 7 individual parcels on that property.
Correct.
In this project as it's proposed, there's no relinquishment that I see in here or requirement from the county that stops them from drilling a total of 7 wells. Correct? They can go ahead and do that.
Yes, that's correct.
On each parcel. In your professional judgment, the impact of one well versus 7 wells as opposed to downslope. High impact, medium impact, low impact?
Well, as I went through the process for my report, one well is not going to have any impact on adjacent well owners, the creek, or downstream.
Right.
Okay. So if you were to put a well on each parcel, you would even minimize it more. So you would have an insignificant impact.
Okay.
All right.
So you answered that question right what I was thinking. And so one of the next items here is zoning. And maybe that's where I need to go with this right now. Because there's a big question about whether or not this project can occur on that property because of the Scott Valley Area Plan. Yet under your analysis, it's perfectly legal. Is there anything to stop the ownership of this property from coming in and taking those 7 lots and dividing them down even smaller?
What is the potential build out?
Pulling up the zoning map. Give me a moment. Because I believe all of the Kidder Creek parcels related to the county zoning ordinance. For rural residential are all 5 to 10 acre minimums.
How are they under the SVAP?
Well, so those parcels are also the zoning related to those parcels for Scott Valley Area Plan predominantly are within the non-resource area policies for 5 acre minimum. And then there is some excessive slope within there. I don't know off the top what the minimum is for.
So what I'm asking.
Let me verify.
Ms. Barber is.
Lane.
How many, or Haley, Ms. Lane, pardon me, I've got too many people going here.
That was nine years ago.
I've been going since 1:30 chasing wolves. Every day since the 29th of January.
You catch it?
Actually, I had three of them 2 mornings ago. How many lots can be built out on this property?
How many lots for all
How many lots can be created out of this existing property with current zoning?
Oh,
if they wanted to split it.
Multiple.
Yeah,
how many?
Multiple.
How many?
Yeah.
Rough idea.
I'll take a little bit of time here and pull up these maps and see.
I'm just going because I'm looking at potential impacts here. If they decided to come in and ask for property split.
Mm-hmm. Through the chair.
Rachel.
Just so you know, right now the state is requiring that any residentially zoned property can have a build out of up to 3 units, even if it's only designed for a single family, and that's the main dwelling itself, an accessory dwelling unit, and then a third, which is the junior accessory dwelling unit. That's, of course, dependent on the availability of water and septic systems, so smaller parcels may not have the septic capacity for that many units, but a 5-acre parcel generally, if it has good soil, and you can talk to Dan at Environmental Health about this, generally has the capacity for a minimum of 2. So you're looking at probably 3 per parcel that ultimately could be divided into.
Welcome to California.
We have a rough estimate for you.
Yeah, that's fine.
20 parcels.
20 parcels.
With potentially 3 per parcel.
Public hearing is closed.
Correct.
Which is 60 residentials.
Yep.
Okay.
Which could then come into play for 60 individual domestic wells.
Incorrect. In a sense.
Right.
So you'd want to have the existing well on each parcel, which would be 20,
right,
should be sufficient to provide water to the 3 potential dwellings.
So they couldn't come in and just say, okay, I want to cut it up. We go through that process. Now you sell each one of those individual lots.
It would be 20 wells.
Okay, 20 wells can go in there.
Yeah, and it's, okay, you know, you could drill additional wells on that property, so it shows that you only get 3 gallons per minute, you could drill another well, you know, to get better production and so forth.
They could do that now without...
I know, that's
what I'm... Ultimately, that parcel under current executive order would be restricted to 2 acre feet per year of use.
Okay, because what I'm trying to get at is what's the total impact if they should choose to go down that road and put in these other wells? Is there still going to be a insignificant impact downslope?
If you split up all those into 5 and 10 acres,
mm-hmm,
I'm not going there. Right, and I'll tell you why. Because I haven't analyzed it, and I got into. I think I shared this with you once before. I got a simple inquiry once over in Shasta County about could you get a well in this one area, and I said yes. I didn't know they were talking about a 450 lot subdivision,
right,
you know, with a well on each parcel. So given the what I know of the geology, you're as Rick mentioned, is that you're gonna be in the hard rock area in some of those, right, parcels. And so if you're getting 3 gallons a minute, 5 gallons a minute, you're doing really well. And so, and there, it's really hard to show impact. So, except for the, you know, you're removing, well, I'm just gonna go back to my thing of domestic wells, and I use that term real loosely in my report. I compared it basically ag wells and domestic wells. There's a whole bunch of different uses. But to give an idea, a domestic well, or like a camp well, is a lot of the water goes right back into the groundwater system. And the same thing was if you split those parcels up and they were just basically a house, you know, with maybe a small of it, just the outside watering is what
Right.
Is most of the water use. Anything that's used within the house
right.
goes back into the groundwater system.
Right.
So,
what I'm trying to demonstrate here is that the impact of one well on this project is not going to have any significant impact whatsoever downslope that I can see, judging on the information that I've been provided, looking at what the zoning is, what can and cannot be done. You folks are working on a housing element, correct?
Correct.
Update of it.
Yes.
I was just reading yesterday morning, the city of Huntington Beach has been handed a letter from the Attorney General saying you will provide housing for homeless, low-income, medium-income people. This is an ideal spot to put that if this ownership decides we're done with this and we're going to go put that in there, which opens up a whole other can of worms. Last week, the city of Yreka had a city council meeting, standing room only, standing out in the parking lot of a whole bunch of mad people because the city council was going to adopt this from a whole lot of people outside of the city of Yreka complaining about it. And that's an edict coming from Sacramento. You will do this. So there's a lot of rancor about development here. I call this development. And they don't like that in their neighborhood. But we're trying to deal with the CEQA document, with this specific project, and minimize the impacts of those each item on the CEQA checklist, period, to mitigate for those. And not make a political decision. So, and from what I'm hearing so far, I'm trying to make this as simple and black and white as I can make it.
Yeah. Okay. Supervisors are political, we're legal.
Yep.
Correct.
Through the chair.
Just to give you a little bit more of a framework, the context of this conversation you're having. So, the 20 additional lots is conservative, 2 acre feet per annum, that's 40 acre feet per year. Mm-hmm. And I believe the project is slated for what, 25 max acre feet, so close to potentially doubling the groundwater impact.
Okay.
Well, actually, for a correction, it's only 21 acre feet over the existing use. It's 25 with full development max, so, but there's already 4-5 acre feet that is currently being used.
I just wanted to, we've got a late person in and they wanted to fill out this. Did you want to re-announce for latecomers?
Yeah, public comments closed. We're to the point of the hearing protocol where the commission is asking questions of individual experts, departments, agencies, etc., to make a decision. So, right. Continue, Mr. Hart.
Back where I was going with this housing element, you have this Scott Valley specific area plan. You have the county general plan, which housing element goes into. Does the Scott Valley area plan prohibit what the state has handed down about housing for low income? In other words, does that then have to go folded into the Scott Valley area plan, that can't block it like the city of Huntington Beach just tried to do.
Bill Carroll, County Council. State mandates normally override local controls unless they have built in a provision that says it will come up a local jurisdiction, so otherwise you adopt some alternative. Generally, the state mandate is going to override the local plans.
And general rule, county and local plans can be more restrictive than the state, not less.
Yes.
But when it comes to the housing element, that's what I'm asking.
If there is a portion.
If the city's being told they're going to be sued by the Attorney General, you have to put that in there. They're going to come after Siskiyou County to put it everywhere in the county, on county jurisdiction lands.
There is a portion in the SVAP that does address housing and a need for it when it was written back and it is addressed. It does not prohibit it, but it does mention it, yeah.
Well, that's what I'm, because every time a project comes from Scott Valley, this always gets thrown on the table. Well, you can't do that here. Well, when the state says you're going to do this, the state trumps what the county wants to do.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions related to groundwater?
Not yet. Go ahead. Not at this point.
No, you asked the question I had for unrelated to groundwater.
Okay, I'm good with that.
Okay. For the moment, we're done with you.
Okay. I'll stick around.
Because I'm
your next one.
I'm
so
fine
we've
fire,
hit fire. We've
I'm
hit
fine
pond,
on pond.
We hit groundwater.
Zoning. Any? I don't see the issue that the Board of Supervisors are coming up with here on zoning.
Before you do that, I just want to ask staff. So we've covered in general fire risk hazard. As it reads, we have some specific questions, at least I do, for KCOC related to conditions.
Mm-hmm.
But do you as staff feel we have answered, as it relates to fire, the question/concern supervisors have?
Yes.
Just for fire. Okay. Related to the pond, have we answered, given a clear answer, supervisors, not within our purview, we're not going swimming in a pond that we're not allowed to swim in?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And as it relates to groundwater, have we addressed the question/concern supervisors have?
Yes.
Okay. Zoning.
All right. So
we have three checked off.
Zoning.
To the chair. Before we move on, going back to the fire aspect of it, right? I don't think that our mitigation measures take into the
That's
account.
Number five down here.
Mm-hmm.
To get
we get to that later on.
Yeah.
Because there were some concerns with
I have that, the MMRP down here. Okay.
Okay.
Zoning.
All right. Their concern is the density of recreation taking place at the camp and whether that level of recreation should be considered commercial. Response. All recreational uses are governed under County Code 10-16.1502, Section 10-6.3602.58 defines recreational facilities private as a recreational facility operated by a nonprofit organization and open only to bona fide members and guests of such nonprofit organization. This project fits that, or it wouldn't be here in front of us, according to the analysis of staff and legal.
Yes.
So I don't understand why, what's their.
That's when I didn't
what,
know
what
why
they,
that
why are
one
they throwing
was
it back at us?
Brought back to us.
We wouldn't be looking at it if it didn't meet the zone.
The definition of the laws which we must compare this to has been met.
Mm-hmm.
It's black and white.
Yeah.
Okay.
We can't change. That's up to them to change code.
Right.
We can make recommendations, but we don't change it. Is that your zoning question?
That's it.
Okay. So you know what to go back to them with on that?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So that's zoning.
Okay. We on the biological resources?
That's what I have on my list.
Okay. It says concerns were raised that the biological resources assessment did not include northern spotted owl or bald eagle. Both species are identified in the amended wildlife resource plan and the wildlife resource biological assessment for the emergency road access port prepared by Jimmy Allen. Spotted owl. I've got a safe harbor on my mountain property. And one of the things we have to look out for are spotted owl. I have an incidental take permit for spotted owls. I have an incidental take permit for gray wolves for the operation of that property, whether I'm logging or running cattle. When we're logging, we have to go up and call for Alice at least 6 times. That's pretty spendy. I don't see any mention of that here. Am I missing something? Or was it, is it exempt because it's not a logging operation? It's just a continuation of the commercial recreational camp. So what
or is it interwoven as part of a THP or a fuel load reduction program?
Well, so my understanding is the concern of the board was that these two species were just not mentioned in the wildlife report, which they are, but specifics to the methodology of it, I'll defer it to Jamie Allen, who's still on the line.
Okay, so Mr. Allen, did you hear the question from Commissioner Hart? Need to unmute.
Audio check, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much, Commissioner. Appreciate it. If we could please condense that question back again, I believe I can answer that quite succinctly out there. And yes, you are correct about the standard operating procedures and protocols surrounding Northern Spotted Owl. So just to be able to crystal clear as can be answer your question, if that could be condensed and then reset it. My apologies, I'm juggling a couple of things at the same time here and caught most of what you said, but I'd like to hear it clearly again, please.
Commissioner Hart.
Repeat the question.
Since we're not looking at a THP, we're not looking at timberland conversion, we're just looking at an expansion of an existing use permit. What is the nexus of why we're going back and reanalyzing the impact to spotted owls on this project? Yes, it's on part of the secret checklist. But if we're not disturbing owl habitat or nesting bald eagle habitat, why the analysis? Other than it's part of the secret checklist. And is the impact high, medium, or low?
Thank you for clarifying the question out there. So at the original time of the evaluation, there was no timber harvest ban, no THP put in place or proposed. And at that point, the determination of impact upon Northern Spotted Owl was discountable due to no habitat modification, as well as mostly habitat modification did not occur. Also, it did not break the noise threshold for a noise disturbance that would result in incidental take within the proximity of a quarter mile of suitable habitat. However, something that I heard today that I just want to bring to the commission's attention here is if additional proposed actions are put in place using this Cal Fire fuels reduction as an example, it may warrant reevaluation pre-implementation to avoid any sort of incidental take or disturbance of Northern Spotted Owl and evaluation for other species as well. This particular proposed action was not addressed in the initial report because this is a newer request, if I believe correctly, per the county and Mount Hermon in some sort of agreement out there. That was why the original determination of no adverse effect. Determination to Northern Spotted Owl was initially proposed out there in my wildlife resources report.
Okay, so to add another question for expansion clarification, with what Cal Fire has shared, that KCOC is in the process of doing a fuel load reduction plan, it would be a contingent or a necessary measure at the time of implementation that biological, potential biological impacts would be evaluated prior to that fuel loads reduction plan being implemented. Separate from this use permit, it would relate to the plan.
And it is time sensitive. If this is hanging out there 5 years, 10 years, and then the grant's put in place or some sort of additional funding is fueling this particular action, proposed action out there, I would recommend that there would be further analysis or additional analysis for multiple species that may be affected within 6 months of that proposed action, of actually boots on the ground or saws on the ground implementation.
Okay, thank you.
That's a new condition.
Is it?
To use from that, add a new condition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Other biological questions?
What's that?
Other biological questions from you?
No.
I have none either.
Dusty, you're being awful quiet.
Well, you guys are so technical. Question I have, in November we passed this resolution unanimously in November, and the county sent it back to us to put five conditions to approve, right? Are we bound by that vote in November if we cannot find a problem with those five issues?
Well, let me first say the project as a whole is not back before the planning commission. So I say now would not be appropriate to reverse your decision approving the project. The project is back here because A, the Board of Supervisors wanted the planning commission to explore some questions on further topics, and I expect we will probably report back these discussions within the staff report, and second, to take a look at the mitigation and monitoring reporting program, which legally does not have to be done until after the EIR is approved, but it often is approved concurrently, and that's what the board requested. So at this time, to answer your question, no, now would not be the time to change course and reverse yourselves on the project. I think we're just looking at examining questions on behalf of the Board of Supervisors and looking at our mitigation measures, MMRPs. I suppose technically if you wished to add some mitigation measures, as the staff report says, that might entail coming back again for a properly prepared resolution of findings.
Well, because this fish is yet in the boat, I do have reservations that have come to my light, and if I was to vote again, I don't know, I might change my vote. So how would I communicate that to the Board of Supervisors?
It would be in the vote that we take at some point on this project to either send it back to them or whatever action we take.
Not today?
Yeah, I hope. I hope it happens today. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, but according to what Mr. Carroll said, we were kind of bound by that vote in November.
You can make the statement in discussion after there's mm-hmm. a motion and a second, and it'll carry forward in the minutes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then I could communicate that in the staff report or during my staff presentation, if you so wish to choose.
Okay, so based upon the discussion we just had with Mr. Allen
mm-hmm.
and the biological question posed by Commissioner Hart, I am sensing from Commissioner Hart, and I think I would also be inclined to do so, to add a condition that prior to the implementation of the fuel load reduction plan, that appropriate and timely biological surveys shall be conducted, which I believe is SOP anyways before any fuel load reduction, but so it's clear to the public that yes, additional biological surveys will be done before, as Mr. Allen said, saws on the ground to implement the fuel load reduction plan, which KCOC is currently working on, consulting with CAL FIRE.
Okay.
Would that be accurately stated?
Yes.
Is that okay? All right, there's your biological. Now, you know, we're down to the MMRP now.
Other than I'm going to talk about the road.
Okay, and that's where I'm at, and that's where I have questions for KCOC individuals. So shall we bring...
Let's do the mitigation part and then go back to the road.
Part of my question to KCOC needs to be answered before I can come up with the verbiage for the MMRP. Unless you have MMRP
okay, no,
in general.
No, that's fine. Go ahead.
Okay. Yes.
I have one to go back to, just in your verbiage.
Please come back up to the, and please state your name for the record. Yeah. Appreciate the clarification. Yes.
Greg Roth, Operations Chief for CAL FIRE Siskiyou Unit. One of the things that you may want to include in your last statement is that this also could be done with a registered professional forester. Because not all fuels reduction projects that a landowner may choose to do may involve CAL FIRE specifically. Although we provide advice and stuff like that, any landowner that wants to do fuel reduction on their property can get advice from a registered professional forester that also enacts those type of requirements beforehand.
Okay, thank you. Did you capture that, Gene? Okay.
Yep.
Good on that. All right. So I would like the individual or individuals from KCOC who have or are in the know of the grading and status of the emergency road exiting via Patterson Creek. Whoever that individual would be, please come forward. All right, Mr. Lloyd.
I'll do my best.
Question number one. Can you confirm that the emergency, and we call it access, it's more emergency exit road, is it a deeded easement?
Yes.
Question number two. As
I'm not sure about the verbiage on deeded. It's a legal easement? I don't know the verbiage difference between the
is it a legal deeded easement? Is it noted on the parcels for which it
yes,
passes
yes.
through? Is yes. it recorded that KCOC has a legal easement and ability to use it?
Yes.
Okay. Question number two. Is KCOC willing and able to improve that road, or should it be needed to be traversed via goosenecks exceeding 16 feet in length, loaded with horses for ease of exit, to bring
yeah.
it up to a standard where that's
possible,
safe?
Yeah. And that's
safe.
One of the questions I would address to the 4290 at CAL FIRE, because
4290, I would not take trailers on some 4290
well,
roads.
I would want to address that to them. What you'd have to define exactly what you think is the issue that 4290 doesn't meet, because I've looked all through the stuff that we've designed the road, and it's a pretty nice road. I would say you could take a horse and trailer over it, so I'm not sure exactly. If you're looking at the grade, I can answer the grade if you think this grade is too high.
So there are two issues.
Okay.
Actually, no, there are three issues with the current layout of that road. As the last, now, it could have improved since the last time I saw it.
Okay, let me clarify this. When you're talking about the current layout of the road, there's only a very few people that know the current layout, because part of that road is not developed yet.
Correct.
And we're working on that with the 4290 standards and an engineer to design it to meet their standards. So that part of the road, you can't really evaluate. The rest of it's all pretty straight, which is the old Taylor Divide Road.
Okay.
And it will all be improved up to 4290 standards, so I really don't know what you're looking at that you think would not meet a horse and a truck.
Okay. So there are three concerns that I have that if the road material, it's rock solid, so traction is not an issue based upon grade, that's number one.
Okay, because 4290 does address the road material and address the grade too.
At various levels, there's, am I correct on that? The levels of use? And I guess what I'm referring to are the standards based upon frequency of use.
There's a roadway standard which requires under a certain grade can be gravel, and over a certain grade and steepness would require pavement.
Okay.
As well as the road base has a weight requirement.
Okay, and so this road will meet those standards?
The requirement would be that it would meet those standards.
Okay, and there is one portion that has not been built yet that will have a very sharp turn with the width. Should not be an issue of a four-door pickup pulling a 30-foot gooseneck without rubbing sidewalls off the tires. It's going to be better than the road up Shackelford.
I believe that the there is a turn radius requirement in 4290 as well, so
okay.
It should meet those requirements.
And at the ridge, it will be cut so as to reduce incline to decline ratio.
Yeah, there's grade requirements that it can be over a certain steepness, or it needs to be paved, and it can't go over a certain steepness period.
This roof is only to be used in the case of emergency, right? It's not for general ingress and egress.
Correct.
I mean, it is
correct.
But
if it does not meet those standards,
yeah,
and you're needing to use it, and you have one get stuck or hung up,
sure.
Then you have a kerfluff.
No, I understand, but I'm just saying that in case of emergency, maybe there's certain standards. Or
that's why I'm asking these three questions, and so they have been answered. Thank you. Okay, so those were the three questions I had at KCOC. What are your road questions?
County road, in off Highway 3.
So it's time for Public Works. Public Works, your turn.
Tom Deaney, I'm the Director of Public Works.
Kidder Creek Road, does the county own the road?
No, the county doesn't.
So everybody up and down that road still own, that has property on that road, owns the road?
Well, the county has an easement and the right to travel on the road.
You have a recorded written easement?
No, we do not own that section in
This is a bugaboo with me for the last 25 years.
Yeah, there's a lot of losing around.
And I've got about 10 miles of it.
So
I own, that I am paying tax on, but the public gets to run up and down that road. You guys come out and you improve it and do whatever you do to it.
Yes, that's quite common throughout the county.
Yeah, it's in the city of Wairika also, there's roads.
Who has the liability?
On the road?
On the road, if somebody gets hurt. If you don't have...
Well, that would all depend on the situation, right?
Pardon me?
So you're talking about if the road conditions are not up to par and somebody gets injured, who would be liable?
Yep.
I've been trying to answer that. It's been a long time since I've been in sports. But generally, depending on the cause of the accident and the county's been maintaining the road, somebody could sue the county for maintenance of the road. It sounds like for instance, Gator Creek is probably a prescriptive easement. There's a lot of those out there that just haven't been formally adjudicated by a court. But the short answer is, if we're maintaining it, our maintenance somehow contributed, or lack of maintenance, that we otherwise undertook the duty to do, cause the accident, then the county could be one of the parties liable.
So if the parcel that still owns the roadway and by happenstance, they put something out there in the road, park the car partway out in the road, and somebody comes along and plows into it. Is the property owner liable? Is the county liable? I know I'm asking you a really bad question here, and the reason I'm asking this is because you got a road going up there, and you can't, it isn't a 60-foot easement going up through there. You don't even have, you know, you don't even have shoulder along the road. Mm-hmm. And since there's all this vitriol about the use of that road and the amount of traffic going up there, and we cannot set speed limit, correct? Even though the Board of Supervisors did that on Big Springs Road from the intersection of A-12 and Hart Road, because there's 45 entrances on that 2-mile stretch of road. So I'm going back to speed. If they did it there, how come we can't do it here?
Usually it's an act of legislation to modify speed limit, so usually you are in conjunction with CHP conducting of a speed study.
Even on a county road? I get that on State Highway 3, but on county road?
On county public roads.
Okay, so the speed limit is determined by a traffic and speed study on county roads. There is some leeway, is my position in road commissioner, to move that up or down, but honestly, it's whether you round up or down. So we're talking 5 miles an hour, typically, is what I can shave off a speed study off the 85th percentile of traffic on that road.
When you take a look at a specific stretch of road,
yes.
When you are coming up with a determination, is safety a primary concern or criteria in making that decision?
Yes. Using the basis of most people driving that road or going to be traveling at a speed that they find safe. So here, do you know? Okay, here's how the speed study works. You go out there and in a location where it is not easy to see, right, so you don't publicize that you're doing the speed study, we start collecting data on cars going through that road. I get the times and speeds and the rough automobile type, vehicle type on that road. You need at least 100 data points. Once I get 100 data points, I count down and grab the 85th one that will put you in the 85th percentile, and I look at what that speed is. Now, you could say that 85% of the cars driving that speed determine that that's the speed that's safe. That's what's laid out by the state on how to do a speed study. That's what we typically use. If there is something extraordinary going on there, then you need to put in different signage and you can temporarily reduce the speed in that point, right? If I have a blind corner, right? If I've got road construction, something like that, I can temporarily reduce the speed on there.
So, hate to be the, I'll throw it out there. If you have a stretch of road that any reasonable person, I'll take myself getting up in years, typically drives at 35 to 36 miles an hour. But we have 85% of the vehicles driving it at 60 miles an hour, then you would be inclined, you could shave 5 miles off and drop it down to 55 if it was currently 45.
That is correct. But so it's a lot more complicated than we're probably going to get into here. But it also depends. So yeah, the prima facie speed limit is not going to be over 55 miles an hour on any county road, right? So the other thing that you need to look at is the accident history on the road. So if there is lots of little accidents or one large accident, it's weighted by time of day, severity of injury, all that kind of stuff. That all can fly into it. You can declare an area a safety corridor and lower the speed limit that way. If you're in an area where there's been fatalities, for example, then you can change the speed limit that way. But all those things not under consideration, right? If there hasn't been accidents, normal, and it happens out in my parents' house, they live on Gazelle Callahan Road, right? People scream up that thing. But traffic study says it's 55 miles an hour. I think 45 safe. I'm just out of luck.
Okay. Yeah, the reason for that jurisdiction is taken away from the municipalities is because when they, I think it was 99, was put in, little communities were going to give a 50 mile an hour thing. They brought down, it was the revenue source for it. So right. They said, count it.
No, I understand that. I'm just making sure we're clear.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
My concern is we're stuck at 55.
Yeah.
There's a way to get there. Somebody's going to have to do a traffic study to get it down. You have other residences on that road who are very concerned about the traffic going up, but they can't get in and out of their driveways safely. How do we address that?
What is the, in your position, what is the process for initiating a traffic study?
There's pretty much two ways that it happens, right? traffic studies have to be done at a certain increment of time to keep CHP happy, because if you don't have a current traffic study on a road, CHP doesn't like to enforce on that road because theoretically those tickets could be beaten to court. So that happens, and great news, almost everything's expired, right? So we're working on it. So everybody's on the list. But the other way is a formal complaint in the public works. So you call in or get online and fill out our complaint form saying vehicles are traveling at a speed that I think is unsafe. Please do a speed study, and we go do it. We are, in the past 12 months, I have been running speed studies on various roads continually throughout the county. It is not going to be a problem to move the rig up there when I'm done with the spot I'm in right now.
Well, I would have, can we put it in a condition that the owner of the project perform a traffic study to determine what the appropriate speed is before it can be issued, and that gets it out.
So,
does that could take a long time?
No,
he just said he could move the equipment. So I guess the question is that reasonable as a condition, or would it be that a traffic study is requested to evaluate South Kidder Creek Road? What's legally within the purview of the commission?
I'm not sure. My first thought is the road commissioner has his own jurisdiction.
Let me ask you that. Could we as planning commission ask you to perform a traffic study?
Yes.
On South Kidder Creek Road?
Yes, you can. Not necessarily as planning commissioner, or just as a citizen, you can. You can request it.
So what I'm looking here is if we send this back to the Board of Supervisors, the traffic study analysis has been done, and here's the recommended speed that will be taken care of on that road, the signage and whatnot that has to be there. We're not going to be able to stop everybody ripping up and down the road, but if we cross that legal threshold, where we don't have to back this project up another 6 months by go out and do a traffic study and then come back and adopt this is what the speed's going to be.
Through the chair. Joe, requesting the study and getting the results that you want, you have to understand that those are two different things. If the speed limit out there is already 45 miles an hour and people are driving in excess of that, now you have an enforcement issue. And I know that's plain as day to everybody here, but it comes up a lot, right? Where you get complaints of excess speed in an area that's 45 miles an hour, mm-hmm. and I get a request to drop the speed limit down to 35 miles an hour. That doesn't do anything except make more speeders, right? Mm-hmm. So if people are traveling in excess of the marked speed already, then we have an enforcement issue, and I would try to approach it from that side.
That's when I call up CHP and let them park in my driveway hidden by a tree as a and snag people.
Precisely.
Yeah. I bring you iced tea and whatnot during the summer while I'm sitting there.
It doesn't have to be CHP, can the county?
Oh, yeah.
Sheriff?
Sheriff.
Yeah. Sheriff, yes, the sheriff is allowed to, they can do that as well.
But in response to the what the supervisors kicked back to us on, is it a condition or do we as commission recommend that the supervisors formally request it be done to establish whether or not safe speeds are posted? Are the proper signs posted?
But just generally going back to the list, there wasn't anything that was on the list that the Board of Supervisors asked to have reviewed. The traffic piece was not. It's already said it's been done, as Mr. Harder stated. I would completely treat this as a completely different, separate from the process.
Okay. All right.